Okay, it's time to talk wheels. It's the Car Guy Show with automotive consumer tips, industry updates, interviews, and enthusiast news. If you care about cars, this show is for you. Now you're tuned in, so let's get tuned up with your host. Here he is, Steve Ford, the Car Guy.
Hello and welcome to another segment of the Car Guy Show here coming at you from the broadcast tower of News Talk 990 KTMS. We're connecting you to automotive consumer and enthusiast news, insights, and interviews anywhere you're hearing our signal in Santa Barbara and the surrounding communities. In today's program, the topics we're going to put up on the lift in Auto Shop Talk align with where the needle of our calendars points north to 2013 and beyond. And in what you're going to be hearing straight ahead, we'll start with an auto consumer tip for this week, where you may have heard the term black box about modern vehicles, that same type of flight recorder that commercial airplanes have that keep second-by-second data from a plane's travels and is often the most accurate source of that what happened in an aviation accident for investigators. Well, in the automotive world, we have that same type of black box technology, but how long have these been in our vehicles and what information do they actually capture? We'll swoop into that topic when we continue into the road safety topic with accident investigator Richard Hill of Forensic Automotive Consulting. And then we'll move over to the Highway Patrol on what you need to know about using those carpool lanes on the freeways into Los Angeles and throughout the state of California. Travel safety insights that are a part of a salute and celebration of the coming new year as the clock and the calendar place us at this threshold of a new year. These insights with you straight ahead when we return from these messages. You're tuned into the Car Guy Show on News Talk 990 KTMS. We'll be right back.
May I help you?
Yeah, you stock serpentine belts?
Serpentine? What do you have, a snake under your hood? Parts counter, what's up?
Yeah, I need pads and rotors for an 02 Ford Mustang.
Pads and a distributor rotor? You mean pads and drums?
No, pads and rotors. I think I'll try a few more calls.
Larry's Auto Parts, Phil.
I'm looking for pads and front rotors for an 02 Mustang.
Okay, we stocked the pads. What's your concern on the rotors?
Sounds like the pads have just hit metal.
Well, bring them in and let's measure them. There's a good chance we can machine them for a fresh surface and save you money, too.
Well, yeah. Hey, what about windshield wipers?
Well, we stock wipers and we offer free installation. And in most cases, just the refills without buying the entire blade.
More than auto parts, more than service. Along with a national CarQuest brand. Expertise you experience every visit. Larry's 8-Day Auto Parts, Old Town. Goleta, 964-3545. That's 964-3545.
I'm Larry's Auto Parts owner, Phil Unander. Our team is here to be your solution.
When it comes to keeping your wheels looking like new, whether you're a passionate car buff or a daily commuter who simply seeks the best in value and integrity, there's a name in Santa Barbara that fits both profiles. Tri-County Auto Glass. Today's auto glass installers all have to service more sophisticated and precise automobiles than just a decade ago. And while the majority of auto glass businesses have state-of-the-art tools and equipment, what we all know is harder to find are the industry-certified craftspeople and the highest levels of customer service, which is why Tri-County Glass customers range from Concord Elegance level show car owners to everyday family sedan and pickup truck owners. Rockjet repairs or glass replacement with lifetime repair credit and 30 years in Santa Barbara. While a positive word of mouth reputation may bring you in, courtesy quality and that new window glass shine will bring you back. Tri-County Auto Glass, downtown Santa Barbara. Call them or stop in for a quote on a window repair or replacement today. 963-6200. That's 963-6200.
I'm Scott Budo, owner, manager, and a certified auto glass technician. At Tri-County Auto Glass, we are about quality, safety, and value.
In the old-time movies, you used to see an automobile junkyard as a place with rusty old wrecks and big cranes scrapping obsolete machines. Those days were black and white, and today's a world of digital full color. And in the new era of the green car, Steelhead Auto Recycling is at the leading edge of used auto parts. As new and future cars approach 100% recyclability, more than 70% of even older car and truck parts find new life as they come back in service at Steelhead Auto Recyclers, which means huge savings for you. You'll save on major parts such as engines and transmissions. But you can also repair and refresh your wheels with money-saving body trim and accessory parts, from hubcaps to glass, doors, fenders, taillights, and accessories. With a full-service counter and national parts search power and the new self-service section at Steelhead Auto Recycling, you'll save both ways. Plus the security of a full 90-day warranty on all parts. Digital on the web at buyused.net or analog by phone at 683-8557. That's 683-8557. Steelhead Auto Recycling.
So you're one of those lucky car enthusiasts who has the privilege of owning a rare, vintage, antique, or maybe one of those British specialty cars, the kind that makes heads turn and brings compliments at stoplights. Let's say a Model A Ford, a 29 Buick, or one of those stunning Packards from the 1930s. But one of the challenges of these rare vehicles is finding an auto professional who can wake up that historic machine so the engine will sing that special tune, or have headlights that both glow equally. Maybe just an old-fashioned tune-up the way it used to be, or even servicing that other ancient device, a car. Carburetor. Sounds like a long time ago? Not at East West Motors, where servicing, repairing, and reviving mechanical gems is a daily craft. Owned and operated by a veteran Concours d'Elegance judge who knows what 100-point quality looks like. At East West Motors, you experience what 100-point collector car service feels like. Call 965-7003. That's 965-7003. It's the best shop this side of Radiator Springs.
My name is Roy Miller, and I approve of this message.
And we're back with you, and over to the first of our topics on that black box question. We found our way over to Mr. Richard Hill of Forensic Automotive Consulting, and we'll move over then to a moment with him to define the black box we hear about. Over to Richard now. Define what we hear as the black box. People hear about that, and they might be intrigued to find out just how far back that black box technology goes, maybe farther than some even who are insiders in the industry. I certainly think that was interesting to talk with you before we turn the microphone on. Please take us back. How far back do we go on capturing computer-based data for accident investigation?
Well, the basic information that we currently look at in our black boxes, and the black box itself is something called an airbag control module, yep, or they have various acronyms for them, right. ACM, airbag control module,
right.
SDM, which is a supplemental restraint diagnostic module.
Right.
I mean, there's a lot of different acronyms used by different companies.
But collectively, the black box works, right, for the consumer?
Essentially, yeah.
Yeah.
And originally, when the airbags started coming out, they needed a system to tell the airbag when to fire.
Right.
And that's what that box was for, was it had accelerometers in it, and it also had accelerometers mounted in the car in various locations that would communicate with this black box.
Right.
At that time, in the early stages, a lot of the airbag control modules did not record any information. And to this day, there are manufacturers who do not record information in their airbag control module. The very earliest versions of the black box, the recording system,
right,
actually go back to the early 80s.
Okay, now I would think people would, if I'd asked the audience to give a survey answer, I just have a hunch, a lot of people would be thinking, you know, the 1990s maybe, certainly by the 2000 era, but it may be even into the 1980s, but I think you said it was as early as 1982, 81?
At least as early as 82, I was aware of it. Yeah. I've been an automobile racer for 40 years, and
yeah,
one of the racers that I knew at a race up in Laguna Seca,
yeah,
up in Northern California, was talking about the fact that he was working on these systems that had been used in certain American sports cars,
right,
that the manufacturer was trying to figure out why certain accidents were happening. And they had incorporated. Now, these black boxes were not connected to airbag control modules because there were no airbags on these cars.
Right.
So it was just simply a simplified system that would use accelerometers and a recording device to record what happened during an accident.
Right.
And then they could come in later on and, as part of their investigation of the accident, determine, okay, what occurred here?
Yeah.
what kind of forces were involved, what kind of inputs were occurring.
You mentioned that that was one vehicle that was the GM's early test bed for, you know, introduction, not a test bed, really an actual.
That's what I was told.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't have written documentation of that. This was all anecdotal information from another racer who happened to be working on these projects, and his claim was that the Corvette used a simplified black box system. At that time, we were using the term because that was what was used in the aircraft industry.
Okay.
Then into the 90s, when airbags were becoming quite common, General Motors really pushed to record this data, originally just to figure out how the systems were working and how they could improve them. And that certainly was the intent, was not to spy on what the people were doing with their cars. They just wanted to know, were the airbags deploying properly? Were they deploying at a time when you didn't want them to? Or were they not deploying when you did want them to? So that was the main thrust.
When do we see manufacturers being able to offer information that's data collected on vehicles? And it sounds like you're, if I understood you correctly, you're qualifying the Corvette comment to be really just sort of hearsay, that GM is the first to make it at that level where they're really monitoring the data?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
As far as my background,
yeah.
GM was the one who really
approximately what
introduced
year?
The kind of black box that we're currently dealing with, the ACM type of system, we're dealing with late 80s, early 90s. It was in development.
Okay.
And
Richard, we've heard so much about the black box over the years. I mean, not necessarily everybody, but a lot of consumers and certainly a lot of enthusiasts. And we know that vehicle technology has become so sophisticated that some of us have heard, and I think rightfully so that we believe, that the vehicle has collected data that can be accessed later by a person such as yourself, and you can actually see the throttle position, whether the car hit the brakes, how fast the airbags deploy.
Yeah, I mean, basically the most modern systems, the latest up-to-datest systems that are out there, they will gather a great deal of information, including things like the whether they're on the gas pedal, whether they're on the brake pedal, things like where the seat is in the seating position.
Because of electronic controls of seating position, automated memory, and that type of thing?
They actually have, even on a manual seat, they have a switching mechanism that will say whether it's in the forward half or the rearward half of the seating position.
I want to be sure I understand this. I'm smirking when I say this to you, but I'm thinking, okay, we've gotten so sophisticated, even if you have to grab that handle yourself and slide the seat forward and backward, the computer's watching?
Yes.
Okay. Now, what year do we see these black boxes? I'll just call them that. I know that you're an expert and you deal with this on a very technical level, but for the collective overview issue of computer technology being saved, what year should folks understand this data is beginning at the most fundamental level to be captured and saved in a computer on board?
The very first year that we have access to, and this is not what General Motors has access to, this is people working in this industry outside of the manufacturers, the earliest year we have is about 1994.
Okay. Now, 1994, when does it become in? Now, you mentioned General Motors. I take it General Motors is a pioneer.
Yes, they are.
Okay. So now there are a number of manufacturers today collecting the data. It's not projected away from the car necessarily, unless it's like you have OnStar and you have telematics, I take it as well. But it's being collected at the point of airbag deployment. Am I right that far?
It can be collected even without a deployment. There
okay.
are different thresholds. They have what you call a non-deployment event that can be recorded where you've had a minor accident that would not entail using the airbag, but it still records that. But a non-deployment event that's recorded eventually gets written over as the vehicles continue to be driven.
Thanks, Richard Hill of Forensic Automotive Consulting. We'll look forward to reconnecting ahead on vehicle safety. But for the moment, let's move over to define the laws and safe driving tips about using those carpool lanes correctly and avoiding that what can be as much as $340 is the fine that can be part of the cost of education without these tips from the California Highway Patrol. Let's go over to Officer Leland Tang from Public Affairs California Highway Patrol. So we have the opportunity to go over and have a conversation with a representative of the California Highway Patrol. I had the surprise in an opportunity earlier to speak with Officer Leland Tang, who was on site at a car show over at the Woodley Park in the San Fernando Valley. And what caught my eye was an earlier model Highway Patrol car. I think it was a Dodge Polara, 1970 era Dodge Polara, equipped as it was at the time. And it might have been next to a later model California Highway Patrol vehicle. But both of them sitting in a bunch of hot rods at a car show caught my eye. And that's the intention of Officer Tang and the California Highway Patrol, because he is a public relations representative. Although he's a California Highway Patrol officer, his responsibility is to deal with the media. And I walked up not knowing that he was actually a public relations person or a public affairs person for the California Highway Patrol. And I thought to myself, you know, one of the questions I've always wanted to ask is to go over and ask an officer from the CHP or somebody knowledgeable, Santa Barbara Police Department or Ventura Police Department, somebody along the coast, but best is the California Highway Patrol for this particular question. And with it, I will welcome our guest, who is Officer Leland Tang, and it has to do with the Diamond Lane and dealing with freeways and highways in California. Officer Leland Tang of the California Highway Patrol, thank you for taking time to join the Car Guy Show.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me. It's a pleasure. You know, as the public information officer for the West Valley area, you know, I'm tasked with, you know, educating the public on new upcoming laws, current laws, and then just also being a way for the public to communicate their needs and desires to our command staff. And so, you know, our area, the West Valley CHP area, services the San Fernando Valley and the Santa Monica Mountains, which is about 480 square miles.
Sure. So
we're a very busy office. Mm-hmm. You know, we have about 113 officers that serve a population of about 2.1 million people. So it's a very daunting task, but, you know, we always tell people that, you know, traffic safety always rests with the three E's, which is education, enforcement, and engineering. So I'm happy to say that I take care of at least the two E's, which is education and enforcement.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's important. So it was a pleasure talking with you and sharing my knowledge when it came to the carpool lanes and the diamond lanes. And we and our discussion, if you remember, was, you know, just how different it is from NorCal to Southern California.
Yeah, you're right.
And the markings, and then also some, you know, a lot of information in regards to, you know, a common question is, and I think you even asked it, you know, why is there a white line on the inside of that double yellow line?
Well, let me back up with you, because you're hitting it very precisely, and you're reminding me of the discussion. You have a great memory. I walked up to you, and I saw you as you were wearing the full uniform and the badge, and there's nothing on you that says PR person for the California Highway Patrol that I could see. And I just, of course, because you are an officer, I just thought, you know, hey, by the way, I'm here talking to, and I'm here looking at these cars. You're an officer. One thing I wonder about is these diamond lanes that I'm dealing with, and I don't want to get one of those fines. But I find myself confused. There's breaks in the lines. There's double doubles. There's single doubles. There's white. I don't know the right place to enter or exit. So, folks, I want to tell you, with Officer Tang on board right now, what I talked to him about was just to clarify what I think we should all better understand, and I don't think most people know how this law works. But the most fun, before I toss it back to you, Officer Tang, is that I had a conversation with you for probably 10 minutes or so, and I said, you know, you speak so well about this. Is there somebody you can refer me to do an interview with you and get permission to talk to you? And you said, well, that's my job. I am the public affairs or public information officer. And I just want to compliment you and let you know, it's like, well, that fits. You know, I realized, well, great, then would you join me on a radio show? So here we are, and you allowed me to reconnect with you, and you kept your promise, and I've kept mine. So
it's a great service what you're doing, because obviously it affords me the opportunity to share information and, you know, what we're all about. And it's contrary to popular belief, we're not out there just to give it to people and to cite as many people as we possibly can. Our primary mission is public safety.
Yeah.
And if we can accomplish our task and our mission of public safety through education, then that's fantastic.
Sure. Well, that's what we're here to do, right?
Right. And the enforcement component is just something to reaffirm the educational component.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's truly what it's all about.
Well, so, and it's an expensive ticket, by the way, just to be sure if people just tuned in. We're talking with Officer Leland Tang, you know, the California Highway Patrol in the San Fernando Valley, talking about Diamond Lane entry and exit. And let me just bring you back to that for a moment, because I want to remind folks, you see that fine. What's the current fine as we head into 2013 if you don't follow this law?
Well, it varies from county to county based on the penalty assessments. But currently, right now in Los Angeles County, it's a little north of $340.
So, folks, it's worth listening.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
To avoid that ticket. All right.
Exactly.
So, what are the? There was a couple of key things you wanted us to know when we talked. Wanted people to know when I talked to you. When do you enter? When do you exit a Diamond Lane? That was what I think I talked about first.
Exactly. And I, if you recall, I brought to your attention that when you're in the carpool lane. A lot of people don't know when there's going to be an opening coming
right.
up.
A legitimate legal opening.
Exactly, yeah. a legitimate legal opening.
Right.
And I said, well, if you look for those signs that go over the carpool lane, most of the openings on the Southern California carpool lane, most of those openings will have a sign that goes over.
You're talking about arching over like a across all four or five lanes of the freeway?
It'll actually be just a sign that
mounted on the center section of the highway.
It'll be mounted on the center divider, correct? And it'll be just a sign that will alert you and say, carpool lane,
right?
And it'll say two or more individuals.
Got it.
And it'll have an arrow pointing down. That it will signify that there is going to be a break or what we call the broken dotted white line,
right?
And that is the entry point or exit point for you to enter into that carpool lane.
Okay.
Now, for those areas that don't have that, there will still be a sign mounted on the center divider that will tell you, exit up ahead for whatever street or whatever interchange is coming up. So there's plenty of signage. We just have to have that high visual horizon and look far ahead, not just on the bumper of the car in front of us.
Right.
But if we maintain that high visual horizon and we see those signs mounted on the center divider, whether it be over the lane
or on
the divider.
Is that a white sign with black letters, yellow sign with black letters, any kind
of... It's going to be a white sign with black letters.
That's what I thought. Okay. No,
right.
So it's different than the other signs. You can differentiate it that way and know that's what you're looking for.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
White sign with black letters. Got it.
Exactly. And then and then you'll have other signs that, like I said, you may have a single pole sign, which is mounted on the actual center divider.
Right.
And that might be a green and a blue and white type of sign. But whatever you see a sign mounted on the center divider, that usually signifies that there's going to be an opening up ahead in regards to the carpool lane.
Right.
What we don't want to see, which is a huge safety issue, and the reason why we do that here in Southern California, because we have so much traffic congestion, is that's the reason why we have the double yellow lines. We don't want to see the general public crossing over the double yellow lines and going in and out of that carpool lane freely.
Okay, now,
what happened?
I'm sorry. You're leading up to the crash prevention. I'll let you go, please.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And what that does is because, as you know, for those who travel the carpool lanes, you'll notice the carpool lane is like an express lane. So it travels faster than the other
theoretically.
The other lanes of traffic.
Some people go in there and go 50 miles an hour. That's another topic for
another time.
Yeah.
But when you're in the carpool lane, let's say you're doing 50 miles an hour, and then the traffic to your right is stop and go, which is maybe 5 to 10 miles an hour.
Right.
It is a huge safety
hazard. I can see where you're going. You're saying somebody decides they want to jump in, and they're hit by a car going 50 miles an hour.
Right.
60.
So now you're going from 5-10 miles an hour. You make your lane change. You're at 10 miles an hour. Car's rapidly approaching you at 50 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
There's not enough braking time
for
that car.
Right.
And then also, do you think that car was anticipating it? Absolutely not.
No.
Because that car
Scary thought. Thank you.
Right.
Yeah.
And so that does happen. That's the reason why we do the double yellow line.
I think it's everybody's fear when you're going 50, 60 miles an hour, rightfully, and then you have this row of traffic to your right or left that's parked, and you just are thinking there's going to be some nutcase who's just going to decide, I'll just kind of swing out there and go 5 miles an hour for a few feet.
Exactly.
It just doesn't work. Okay. Now, let me clarify something I asked you. You'll recall.
Right.
I was confused. I thought, okay, well, if I see a double yellow line, that by itself I recognize as do not pass.
Correct.
Then I see a double set, and I believe, correct me if I missed it here, that it really doesn't change it. If you see a double yellow or a double yellow, they really pretty much mean the same thing in a diamond lane. You just cannot cross that.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's absolutely correct.
Okay.
You're absolutely correct.
Why then do you have if you have two yellow lines, I take that from Officer Tang speaking with you previously, some time ago, to mean you just don't cross that double yellow strip. Why would the designers of highways then have a double set of yellow lines? What's the difference? It's they're both don't cross.
They're both there. It could be for roadway design. It could be for numerous different reasons. But if we could put double yellow lines all the way through, that would be fantastic.
It's a space limitation then, probably.
But it's a space limitation because, you know, we have so many space constraints that it just makes it difficult for us to do that. The thing that really is important to note is that, you know, there's that solid white line that's on the inside of those double yellow lines.
Right.
And that really throws a lot of people off. I can't count how many times the public has come up to me and said, you know, what does that white line mean? I can cross over the double yellow line?
Enlighten us.
And the answer is no. The white line is there as a legal technicality. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by legal technicality is that when the carpool lanes were first installed, we didn't have that solid white line in there.
Right.
And what we found was that if you don't have that solid white line on the interior of the double yellow line, then in legal terms, you're driving on the wrong side of the roadway.
Okay.
You're facing the wrong direction. And so that's the reason why the white line is there, so that you're not driving to the left of a double yellow line. You're driving to the left of a solid white line.
Interesting.
And so that's the purpose of the solid white line. It's to make it legal for you to drive to the left of a double yellow line.
So let me be sure I'm getting a visual here, since we're dealing with radio, the theater of the mind. You know,
right.
You're driving along either southbound or northbound on a particular freeway, or east or west, and you have a double yellow to your right. You're saying then you have another white line to the left of that double yellow that's between you and regular freeway traffic?
Well, actually, if you're in the carpool lane, okay, then between the double yellow line and your vehicle, which is in the carpool lane, will be a solid white line.
That's okay. Okay, so it's between that white line separates you from
the double yellow line.
Got it. So it's defining your lane as that's tricky. Now I'm thinking I can drive inside of a double yellow. Wait a minute. I think I follow. You're saying if you were otherwise traveling to the left of traffic on a crossing over a double not crossing over on the other side of a double yellow.
Right.
You would be in typical convention, you would be on the opposite lane of, you'd be facing oncoming traffic.
Correct.
So the white line is a confirmation that you're on a dedicated route going the same direction as the freeway traffic to your right.
That is correct. Okay. Absolutely correct.
I need a photo almost to help people see what I'm
saying. Yes, and I know that's and it's hard to do on radio, so we have to kind of paint a mental picture there.
Right, right.
Absolutely.
Okay, so then you can, just to recap, for folks that might have heard this and not captured it yet, when you're on the freeway and you see a diamond lane, Officer Tang, if I'm passing question one, it would be, how do you know when to merge and exit from the diamond lane? The answer is, when you come to a point where there's a sign, a marker coming out of the center divider that's typically white paint sign with black letters, it could be blue with white. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. When you see that kind of a sign, it's a beacon to alert you that you have an entry or exit point coming up. That entry or exit point will be a place where there are no double yellow or sets of double yellow lines. It'll open up. Is it dashed lines at that point, or what do we look for?
It's actually going to be white dashed lines, correct.
Okay, and that's when you know you can exit.
Correct.
Now, here's the last part, and we'll wrap it up on this point. I was kind of sad to learn from you that I said, well, when do those signs and openings typically come up? Because they don't seem pretty consistent with the off-ramps. And you said, well, they're not consistent with the off-ramps because they're intended to be for people carpooling, meaning that the off-ramps where carpool people are parking their cars are typically where the intended carpool lane was intended to open. Am I right?
Correct.
Partially?
The whole carpool lane and the high-occupancy vehicle lane was created as an express lane.
Right.
And so it was really not to be used for, you know, people hopping on the freeway and traveling two exits.
Yeah,
two off-ramps, one off-ramp, and then getting... So it wasn't, that wasn't the intent. It was to get from one general location to another, and that was the purpose of it. So we call it an express lane.
Got it.
And that was the purpose of it.
Wonderful. So. Okay. So I think with respect to your time here heading into the new year, we must rejoin Officer Tang from the California Highway Patrol to update on some of the laws for folks, and also maybe some new laws we could enlighten people about.
Absolutely. Okay. We would welcome further topics, such as, you know, we're going into the new year, the 2013 year, and so we're going to have a new set of laws. So we would love to have the opportunity to share with your listeners that, once again, it's to make us all safer.
Yeah.
And we think that, you know, obviously educating the public makes a safer public.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And driving in Southern California, particularly Los Angeles and the San Fernando Valley, and all the way up the coast to where we are with this show, Santa Barbara and Ventura, obviously it's the same kind of an issue. It's about understanding the laws and not wanting to have the enforcement come after you, because if that happens, that's when the fines start mounting.
Exactly.
All right. Officer Tang, thanks so much. We'll talk to you in 2013.
Thank you very much.
And now you're better off knowing about those important diamond lanes, or carpool lanes as they're called, and avoid that fine and be safer on the road as well. Thank you all for joining us for this segment on the World of Wheels, and this brings us to the close of another visit with all of you here on the Car Guy Show. Join us here again next week for another segment from the Coastal Riviera right here in Santa Barbara on News Talk 990 KTMS and thecarguy.com. Keeping you car wise, I'm Steve Ford, the Car Guy.